everyone. My name is Andy A. Kassam, Community Organizer with the League of Education Voters, or LEV. Welcome to our online webinar series, Lunchtime Webinars. Each week of the legislative session, the League of Education Voters hosts free, interactive webinars on important and timely issues. For the new year, we have adapted our online webinars to focus on Washington State's legislative session. This is the first in our Lunchtime Legislative Webinar Series. Whew, try saying that three times fast. The legislative session moves quickly. You could spend hours researching and reading about Washington's top education priorities. Let the League of Education Voters make it easy for you. Each week, let inviting a legislator to present, giving policymakers the opportunity to share their most pressing issues, and giving you the chance to ask your most pressing questions. So tune in once a week, 30 minutes, your legislators, your issues. The 2014 legislative session is a short session. The session will convene on January 13th and close on March 14th, just 4 days until session begins. Stay tuned each week for important updates on where you can find information on upcoming education committee hearings. We will also bring you updates on opportunities to join LEV and other advocacy organizations on trips to Olympia, and opportunities to testify or visit with legislators. Stay tuned each week. You don't want to miss out. Visit our webpage at www.educationvoters.org in order to view the full list of past and future webinars. You can also view LEV's 2014 legislative priorities. Just to give a brief overview of LEV's 2014 legislative priorities, these include implementing full-day K, supporting programs to close the opportunity and achievement gaps, which includes discipline reform, culturally responsive instruction, ELL certifications, and expanded learning opportunities. Also on our platform, more access to quality college and career opportunities, such as supporting the DREAM Act, supporting the College Bound Scholarship Program, protecting student aid, increasing coordination between K-12 and our regional community and technical colleges, and creating a college and career-ready high school diploma. Lastly, we will also be supporting effective implementation of a meaningful teacher and principal evaluation. Before we give the floor to our presenter, here are a few quick reminders. You'll notice we have a chat function on the left-hand side of the webinar. This is a space for you to pose questions to the presenter. Please remember to be respectful, as all this information is public and will be archived for later access on our website. We'll also be live tweeting each webinar using the hashtags, hashtag WAEDU, hashtag Levinar, and hashtag WALEG, that's W-A-L-E-G. Follow these hashtags or at EdVoters on Twitter to join the conversation. Today's presenter is our very own Director of Government Relations, Frank Ordaway. Frank has always been committed to community service. Over the past 23 years, he has been a managing staff or board member with domestic and international organizations focusing on sustainable economic development, strategic technology use, social services, energy, transportation, domestic violence, and the environment. The common theme throughout all this work has been empowering people to make positive changes in their communities. There is no more effective way to empower people and strengthen our communities and our economy than an effective education system. This is why Frank is so dedicated to the work of the League of Education Voters. He received his master's degree in public affairs from the Evans School of Public Affairs at the University of Washington and his bachelor's in political science from the University of Oregon. Frank volunteers for various community groups and is the parent chair of the Ferndale Public School Levy Committee. He's also on Twitter. Follow him at Frank Ordaway and join the conversation. Take it away, great. Frank.
Thanks, Andy, and welcome, everyone. Thank you for taking valuable time out of your day to join us here. As Andy mentioned, the session does start on Monday, and I'd like to begin with sort of a landscape of what we expect to see in the session and what sort of environment we will be working in. This is a short session, which is traditionally a non-budget session, and because we have some relative economic stability, at least compared to the last 4 or 5 years, we do not expect major budget shifts to take place in this session, which has taken place in the previous short sessions. What that means is that there will not be a lot of policy related to major expenditures considered during the session. And so that will limit the conversation somewhat in education, because we will not be talking about ensuring that our teachers are well paid or ensuring that we have investments to support English language learners or those kinds of issues. So most of the conversation will be primarily in the policy realm and in policies that do not drive significant costs. Because we are heading into an election year in the fall, both parties have a great deal of interest in getting out of town on time in order to get back home to their communities to campaign. You couple that dynamic with the fact that that there's not a lot of budget options, means that we should have a fairly quiet session overall when it comes to major policy initiatives. We also have an issue of a transportation package, which has, if you've been following the news, has been a major area of effort, both parties, both chambers, and the governor, to try to work out a deal for future investments in transportation. I would make no bets on whether or not a transportation package makes it out during the session. However, the debate around it could certainly limit conversations elsewhere in the legislature, as much of the leadership and would be consumed with the debate over the transportation package. There is one element being proposed to fund portions of the transportation package that those of us interested in education should be concerned about, which is to use funds that would otherwise end up in the general fund and thus be available for education to take those funds and put them back into transportation projects. And so we will be watching very closely that financing option, and if it looks as though things that are being considered would limit our ability to invest in the state's paramount duty, we will certainly raise our voice and hope that you would join us in doing so and encourage the legislature to look elsewhere for its transportation resources as opposed to taking that money out of the general fund. Areas that we will expect some activity, early learning. There's a significant piece of legislation worked on in the House to streamline and make efficient our early learning system. The state has made great progress in its investments and its drive toward increasing quality, and this piece of legislation that we expect to see in the coming days will be capitalizing on that momentum and really trying to set the state on a path to ensuring all of our low-income and at-risk youngest learners have high-quality settings to help prepare them to succeed in life and in K-12 when they arrive there. So look forward to that piece of legislation. In the K-12 realm, there will be debates about career and college-ready high school diploma. There will be efforts related to maintaining state's WIPR from No Child Left Behind and ensuring that $38 to $40 million of Title I funds are kept in the control of our local school districts. There will also be efforts specific to increasing the ability of our teachers, their effectiveness in working with ELL students. So there's discussions around ELL certifications for our teachers and how we might be able to increase the number of people that have that certificate and how to pursue that. We will also be pushing, although the chances are limited, to ensure that our state invests effectively in professional development. A lot of the budget cuts and pressures on our schools over recent years has really hampered our school district's ability to provide our teachers with the supports they need to be successful, and we will be looking for any way we can to increase the flexibility for our school districts to ensure that they can provide adequate support for their teachers and principals, in particular in preparation for the teacher-principal evaluation project as it continues to roll out, and the implementation of Common Core. On the higher ed front, we expect significant activity, in particular related to the DREAM Act. It has been debated much in the legislature over the last few years, but we expect that to be a major effort. There's significant bipartisan support in both chambers, and our hope is that we can get a vote in both chambers and get that to the governor's desk. In addition, in the higher ed realm, we understand that there will be significant review of what is called performance funding for four-year institutions. It's a program that has borne a great deal of fruit in the two-year realm, and for the first time, a significant conversation about applying the same ideas to the four-year schools will be discussed. But again, because it's a short session, and with no budget or limited budget, supplemental budget being offered. What we do expect, especially because it is a election year, is a certain amount of drama. We will see parties, both chambers, doing what they can to put the others in a tough position. But because there's no money involved, most of that will be noise and really more political posturing than significant public policy. So it should be an interesting, quick session this year. And the major battles in terms of significant changes to how we fund our public schools will really be a debate for 2015. So with that, I guess we open it up to questions and move it along.
Thank you, Frank. We do have one question from Dee Dee. She says, do you have an idea where we suggest when they ask that they look for funds? So she's wondering where they will find the funding in the legislature.
I'm not sure, Dee Dee, if you're specifically referencing the transportation package. But if you are, the traditionally, obviously, our gas taxes and our motor vehicle excise taxes and matching federal dollars are the ways in which we've funded our transportation system primarily. Because of the increased efficiency of our automobiles and an overall decrease in driving, we are seeing a slow and steady decline in the amount of gas tax available for transportation projects. So one of the financing ideas that is being considered is that when the state funds a transportation project and they go out and buy the gravel and the tar and the equipment to do the transportation project, they pay sales tax. Currently, that sales tax goes into the general fund to be used for any purpose, but primarily for education. One of the financing ideas being considered is that any sales tax generated from transportation projects would be reinvested into the transportation budget. And while that sounds reasonable, and in some respects it may be, what it does mean is potentially hundreds of millions of dollars that would have otherwise been available for education would no longer be available. And if you do not allocate that money correctly, you could actually see a real detriment to the general fund in terms of its ability to fund education. So we would likely oppose that particular approach. Now, when it comes to additional monies, I mean, our state has a very poor and incredibly regressive tax structure. And we will always be looking for conversations to, it's not necessarily always about raising more money, but raising that money more equitably and ensuring that it's spent in an equitable fashion going forward.
Thank you, Frank. We have another question from Tom. He asks, isn't it true that there will be no loss of federal funding if we lose the waiver? And he's wondering if districts will just lose some discretion as to how the funding's spent.
Tom is right that the amount of money that the state will be sent by the feds would not be affected. But what does happen is that the school district has to set aside 20% or so of their Title I dollars to be used by what are called secondary education service providers. So if you've got a school district or a particular school that the No Child Left Behind law deems as failing, which because of the poor design of the No Child Left Behind law, most of our schools will end up in that definition in short order. It means that those schools have to make that money available for outside providers. Now, in some cases, in some places, that has actually worked out okay. The problem that we see is that there's no accountability on that money. So Tom and I could open up our own tutoring operation. We could provide the bare minimum of services and say the Seattle Public Schools would have to pay us for that service. Without some accountability around those dollars and without some certainty that that work is really aimed at student learning, we would rather see those dollars stay within the control of the school and focus on our most at-risk students. But Tom's initial question is entirely correct. The amount of funds available to the state would maintain the same. But we fear the loss of accountability on that portion of the dollars that the school districts would have.
And we have another question from Karen. She thinks that the legislators were compensating for the gas taxes by the electric hybrid cars by adding $100 to registration. So,
yes, she's absolutely right. For those individual cars, they're seeking to make up the detriment. But for higher mileage cars, which are and this is good news. I mean, good grief. I mean, the fact that we have a more efficient automobile fleet is a positive, both for our pocketbooks as drivers, but also for the environment. But what it has meant is that over time, and not just the reduced use of gasoline, but the reduced number of miles traveled has reduced the overall available funds for our state for transportation projects. And one of the other challenges is we tend to pass these packages once every 10 years or so, and it means that we always end up with a huge backlog of maintenance, and typically that ends up driving up costs. And so the combination of reduced resources on one side and increased costs on the other really puts the state's transportation system in a pinch.
Thank you. Another question from Eric. He wonders, how would you describe the state's current financial outlook? If expectations for this year's legislative session are minimal, then what do you think will be on the table for next year?
I think that most people view the state's economic outlook overall, I wouldn't say rosy, I would say stable. And so while we are not in a spiral meltdown that we had been in previous years, we still have profound income inequality, and our tax structure being as obsolete as it is, does not effectively match the current economy. And so we are a sales tax-based state, and an increasing number of the goods and services we buy, whether they are online or elsewhere, are not subject to sales tax. So as our economy's gotten more modern, our tax system has not. And so it has really put the state government in a pinch in terms of resources. Now, the Majority Caucus Coalition estimates going into 2015 expect there to be an additional billion or billion plus dollars available for expenditures in the next biennium. Whether or not that covers the expenses just from inflation and expanded population, we'll have to wait and see. Without a major change in the way the state approaches its collection of taxes, whether that's a high earner's income tax or some other addition to the system, I would not expect there to be major prospects for whether it's McCleary or higher education funding or even early learning funding, because we simply won't have the resources available. So we're likely to see a session much like we just did, where we cobble together what we can, we make significant new investments, but it will probably not be at the scope that most of us in the advocacy community would want to see.
And we have another question from Dee Dee. She asks, do you feel that the legislators are favorable to online purchases? Online purchases, and if they're if they're favorable to online purchases, she says.
Well, I think if I understand where Dee Dee might be going with that question, the federal government and state governments across the state the state governments that rely on sales tax are pushing the feds for some accommodation on how sales tax can be collected. So from enterprises like Amazon and others, if those purchases are done in our states, that they should charge sales tax based on the state of origin of the purchase. And that would bring a significant, you know, some estimates are in the $500 million range, others are a little bit lower than that, of new money to state coffers. And so it would be a significant accomplishment if we can get the feds to agree that this is a problem. And we were close last year to getting that done, and it would allow states to collect online sales tax in a way that they cannot now. I think that overall, of course, you know, the purchasing and the ability to shop on the Internet is a remarkable evolution and something that certainly is not going away. And so figuring out an equitable way to tax those transactions you know, because it really puts our local retailers at a disadvantage. If you can buy the same item online and not pay tax that I would have to pay if I went to the corner store, it's not a fair tax system, and so it needs to be addressed.
Great. And also we have another question from Karen, and she's wondering about the new Smarter Balanced assessments and the need to take those tests on the computer when most schools may only have one or two computer labs. So wondering how that testing will go about without interrupting instruction for months at a time.
That is an excellent question, and it's a challenge that school districts across the state and the legislature and us as advocates need to address. The provision of the technological resources necessary to take those tests efficiently is immense. It doesn't make a lot of sense for a school district to invest in computers solely for testing. So most school districts, understandably and justifiably, you know, use their computer labs, whether they're in the library or elsewhere, for multiple purposes. They are ensconced in the curriculum in many schools. My own children are in grade school. They have time in the computer lab, but during the time of testing, they don't have access to those machines. And so this is an area of great concern. I would not say, however, that there's been a lot of articulation of great options to address it. So we have a train wreck around this that is coming. There have been talk about delaying the test. There has been talk about taking some of the funds that we have allocated to current end-of-course assessments, sunsetting those assessments and using those funds either for professional development and training or technological purchases to alleviate this pressure. I am not sure where those discussions are going to go in this session. So it's kind of a sad state of affairs in that people recognize we've got a big pinch coming, but to date, no, to me, viable option for addressing that has been articulated.
Great. And another question from Karen. With the preparation for students getting ready for college, she wonders, where do you see the programs for career and tech ed programs, and what sort of future do you see for students who do not go to college?
Great question. And this is an area where I think that we at LEV have learned a great deal over the recent years. And when we say college, what we mean is technical 2 or 4 year. And when we say career or college ready, what we mean is a high school graduate in the state of Washington should be able to go to a technical school, a community college, or a four-year institution without the need for remediation, that our high school graduates should be ready to make those choices without additional education being necessary. And so one of the things that's being looked at in the original proposal from the State Board of Education on the career and college-ready high school graduation requirements, they've recently increased the flexibility in that framework, and the governor has requested specific legislation around ensuring that our CTE and career tech ed or occupational education programs have the rigor necessary for our high school students to perhaps even earn technical or community college credit for those courses. So the idea would be that regardless of what occupational education pathway you are on in high school, we want to make sure that the math and the science and those courses have rigor and are connected to a post-secondary opportunity to ensure that regardless of what that student's choice is, when they leave high school, that they don't need remediation and they can go get started in those programs right away, if not having already earned some credits perhaps in high school. And so the idea behind the Career and College Ready framework, while originally cast as something that was going to prepare people for four-year institutions, is being reworked to ensure that it addresses the needs for all high school graduates, but maintaining the rigor necessary to avoid what are now astronomically high remediation rates among many of our high school graduates when they go to college. Sorry, that was a long-winded answer, but it's an arena of a great deal of work right now.
That was right on, Frank. Thank you. We have another question from Anne, and she wonders, are there any expectations for any changes on the high school graduation requirements this coming session?
Well, there's going to be a lot of work on that. The legislative prospects for a vote to adopt that framework, you know, we are hopeful. We have champions in both chambers who are willing to work hard on the details of this proposal. We know that the governor has been somewhat lukewarm, but with the CTE elevation work and the cross-crediting and course equivalency legislation that he has requested, we are hoping that we can craft a package that will engender his support and the support of some of the other skeptical legislators. But it will be one of our primary efforts this session is to try to get that work across the finish line.
Thank you, Frank, and thank you again for the excellent presentation. For all of those who tuned in today, don't forget that if you missed parts of this presentation, you can go on our website and download the slides. They're available at www.educationvoters.org. As we close this webinar, we would like to invite you to take action, and we'll be doing this each week. This week, as your first action for the 2014 legislative session, we want you to please invite a friend to our next webinar on January 16th, where we'll be joined with Representative Sharon Tamiko Santos. Please forward the invitation you received to your friends, colleagues, and family, and stay tuned for next week. Representative Sharon Tamiko Santos will join us, and last session, Representative Santos proposed an omnibus bill, House Bill 1680, which included components on school discipline, cultural competency, English language learner instruction and accountability, disaggregated data, and educator recruitment. So tune in next Thursday, January 16th, and come prepared with your questions for Representative Santos. Also, save the date. Join us Tuesday, January 21st for a lobby day in Olympia where the League of Education Voters will join the Excellent Schools Now Coalition at its annual legislative luncheon. Please RSVP to Kim Martinez at Kim, K-I-M, at partnershipforlearning.org. That's partnership, the number four, learning.org. And that's where you can get directions and learn more. At this event, legislators will have the opportunity to join constituents, parents, education advocates, businesses, and community organizations from across Washington to discuss what we can do together to improve public education opportunities and outcomes for all our students. Excellent Schools Now includes 40 education, business, and community organizations and is led by the collective efforts of Partnership for Learning, the League of Education Voters, Stand for Children, Schools Out Washington, and Tabor 100. Until then, I'd like to say thank you again to Frank Ordway, and you can join us on Twitter. Our conversation starter is, what's your most pressing concern this legislative session regarding education in Washington State? Join the conversation on Twitter at hashtag WaLedge, hashtag WaEDU, hashtag Levinars, and ready, set, tweet.